Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later in the program, we're going to be speaking with Ben Chavarria about Big Brothers Big Sisters. I'm very happy now to welcome Eliza Frank and Joyce Roberts. They are with Habitat for Humanity and are here to talk about the Women's Build, which is something that we'll find out what it is in just a moment. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's talk for a moment simply about Habitat for Humanity. Probably many of our listeners have heard of this organization. What is it?
It's an ecumenical organization that was founded in the 1970s by Millard Fuller, who was a successful attorney, I believe it was at the time, but who wanted to give back to the community and didn't want to focus his life on material possessions and instead wanted to help others. And so he went to Zaire first, when it was formerly Zaire, and worked to get homes built for families, and then came back to the United States and continued the program. And now it's across the entire globe, building numerous of different affiliates in different countries of the world. And it's about helping build affordable, decent housing for families. And the families, I don't know if it works the same all over the United, all over the country, but in the U.S., I know that you end up assuming a mortgage for a home, but it's at a much reduced cost because the volunteers do the home building, so you reduce your cost of the construction via that, you know, volunteer hours. And also, it's a zero interest mortgage. And so a lot of times people have the perception that they get a free home, and they don't. They do assume a mortgage, but it's just a much more, it creates affordable housing blocks for certain population. And overwhelmingly, we have folks that work full time, but I guess they would fall under the classification of the working poor. They certainly can't afford a home in Santa Fe.
And probably not even a house that would qualify under Santa Fe's definition of affordable housing.
Possibly, right. They also put in hours on the home. So it's not only just assuming the mortgage that they end up doing, but we call it sweat equity. And they end up doing anywhere from 150 to 400 hours of labor on their own home with the volunteers, and their family and friends can also contribute to that. And so it can become a very community-wide effort the more people that get involved.
How is a family selected to get a Habitat or get involved in the Habitat program?
Here in Santa Fe, we have an actual committee. And we can make a plug also for if you don't want to do the construction side of work at Habitat for Humanity and it doesn't call you to use a hammer, we have all volunteer organization committees, and we have a family selection committee that as applicants come in, you just contact the office or go by the office or get online and you can obtain an application, and it asks some key information, and then they talk to you. And it's based on need and your current living situation, and then also your ability to be able to afford a mortgage in the long term. And so they go through quite a lengthy process that, compared to even to a normal person doing a mortgage, it's a little more involved than that even, because you partner with the organization as well to do the sweat equity. And they have homeowner classes, and they do a lot of work, and you get each family that does get selected then now has an advocate that's also a volunteer from the committee who kind of helps them through the process and keeps them informed and coordinates between all of the staff and the individual so that we keep everybody kind of on the same page.
I was thinking about the houses, because they're not big houses. I mean, they're what, usually a two-bedroom house?
We build all three, two, three, and four bedrooms. We don't do the four bedroom very often, but it really just depends on the size of family selected.
Well, what I was wondering was, do you ever have situations where there's an extended family? I mean, there's sort of this middle class American assumption that every family is either a single parent or dual parent family, but what about grandparents and all that kind of thing?
We do have several families, yeah.
Yeah, we had our last full house that we did with Women Build. Maria has her parents there and her two sons. Or is it a son and a daughter?
Two sons, I believe.
Two sons. So that's an extended family that moved into. And then we had another house in, that's in Oshara Village. And then we had another house just off of Jaguar, where it's the same situation. It's the parents are living with the children.
And they're part of the process. How the family gets selected is they all become a part of that. So you make sure you have the size bedrooms that you need, or they contribute hours. Each mortgage signer participates in the number of hours that go into their sweat equity total. And so it's any kind of number of things. I mean, maybe half our homes are for single moms. However, we do have several families that have moved in. And then, like you say, maybe not the classic 2010 definition of the nuclear family. We do have different folks, or a grandmother that lives with them, or things like that.
So you mentioned Oshara Village a moment ago. How do you get involved with developments that are already in progress and say, hey, let's put a habitat house in your new development?
We have another group of volunteers who spend a lot of time looking for land. Habitat does have to purchase its land for the most part. It is not donated. And so they're always trying to stay as far ahead as they can, whether it's 1 year out or less. But they're constantly in contact with different developers and real estate individuals in the community to find land. And then also with Santa Fe's affordable housing ordinance, we do have certain developers come to us and we negotiate a certain, maybe a more of price we can afford for a piece of land to help meet their percentage of affordable housing in the community. And so the house we're currently building off Faya Chimiso is a unit specifically to fill that slot. So we're kind of coming in and in the interest of the development, creating that affordable housing unit on that development. And at Oshara, we did 13 houses, I believe.
And so is it in the interest of a developer, hey, we'll give you the land at a cheap price, then we don't even have to build the thing?
I would think there's some incentive for that, certainly. And I think also just the goodwill and having Habitat out on your site. We try to hang up our signs, and we have so many volunteers that come through. And then when people see our signs, too, people just stop. Oshara was a little more off the beaten path, but where we are right now off Butolph Road, I mean, everybody that lives in that neighborhood that has heard of Habitat or knows one of us stops by on a Saturday and just sees how the progress of the house is going. And so I think it really draws people into a neighborhood. And fortunately, too, I think there's always a concern of some sort of stigma of affordable housing in your neighborhood. I think it helps dispel that misconception, because, we build very nice, straightforward houses. Our three-bedroom houses are they're under 1,200 square feet, but they're certainly an adequate feel. People get to walk around and see what they're really like, and we have very nice finishes on the outside. And I think, it helps with that misconception of, oh boy, what does it mean when some affordable housing moves into my area or something?
Like, there goes the neighborhood?
Yeah, I think there can be a misconception of that. And Habitat has a strong interest, too, in having individual houses dispersed throughout the area. You don't need to have an entire subdivision just for affordable housing. People should be a part of the community. They work in the community. They're, a lot of our home recipients and partners work for the state, work for the city, work for internet providers, work for, they're in the community as well. And so I think it's a really good thing to have everybody spread throughout the area.
I suppose at this point in our history, with the economy being so volatile and so just completely unequal, people at every level of society get into a situation where at some moment their finances go down the tubes.
Right. And find yourself,
at every level of education.
Right. Yeah, we do. We have everything. And I know people have asked also if we've built homes before, do we assist disabled and that sort of stuff. Everybody is free to apply. Like I said, it's fairly based on your income and your ability to pay and your ability. We built a home a few years back for somebody with a disability who has an assistance dog.
Nice.
And, we had there were very few changes that we needed to make to the blueprints to address that, and it was no problem. And she ended up doing more creative use of how to do her sweat equity hours because it wasn't necessarily in her best interest to be out on the site, on the roof, hammering away. So, but, you know, they work with everybody, and there's a real family that gets, you know, brought together, and you end up having all of Habitat and your volunteers as part of that family as well.
We're talking to Eliza Frank and Joyce Roberts about Habitat for Humanity, which is, you both are part of a group called Women Build. So what's that all about?
Well, Women Build is a program that Habitat for Humanity runs. It actually runs it world round. And the idea is to emphasize developing skills and for women to actually develop their construction skills and to have them help in the way that they build a house, so they help the community and they feel a sense of accomplishment in helping the community. And it occurs either as Women Build Week, which this year was May 1st through 9th. I know that's more than a week, but which is when we actually had the dedication, this kickoff for the house that we have this year in Women Build. Or you can stretch out to building a whole house, which is more what we're doing this year for Women Build. Some affiliates are fortunate enough to have enough women that they can actually build the whole house just with women. And they kick all the men off. Well, except for inspectors, because you do have to have inspectors. In our case, we did it where we worked 2 days a week. On Friday and Saturday was Women Build, and the rest of the week, the other regular volunteers worked to building the house. So what we try to do is get groups together that will come out, women primarily. We don't exclude men, but they have to understand that if the women don't understand how to do something, they don't just do it for them. They have to teach them. And women are in charge. Eliza and I are running the construction site during the Women Build days.
So you both are professional builders by training?
Not at
she's,
all.
She's shaking her head.
No, I started working with Habitat for Humanity about 4.5 years ago and have learned a lot about building houses just by working there 2 to 3 days a week.
By watching.
By watching and doing.
Yeah.
And being taught.
Yeah.
Which is a big part of what happens with volunteers and at the Women Build, is we teach them how to build houses.
I suppose women building houses in terms of building confidence to where they feel good about that is second only to women doing math.
Yeah, I think some of that, you know, it's kind of perceived as a male-dominated field or something that somehow innately men are better at or whatever. And it's just that, you know, perhaps the way the industry has been set up is that there are more men in that industry. But there's certainly not, you know, not everybody's going to want to learn to hang drywall, you know. But if you have that interest, it's great. And I think, too, having the partner families there building, then they also, when something goes funny on the house, they don't feel like, oh, my God, I got to call a professional. I don't even know how to approach this, or I don't even know the terminology, or I don't even know how this was put together. I think it builds everybody's confidence and feeling. It kind of demystifies. Home building is not brain surgery, and it's just kind of a method and a methodology, and there's several ways to do any one thing. I know some folks will come and work on the site and they're being like, why do you guys do it this way? And it's just that over the time and the volunteers we've had, these are the ways we approach something, and there are multiple ways to do it. But I think it helps really demystify. People just see it in its beginning phase with just the wood up and the skeleton, the frame of the house, and they watch it go up, and I think it really makes it a comprehensible item right in front of them. And again, less intimidated about, gee, my toilet flapper is leaky, and maybe I'll just take a look at there and go to the store and see if they have something similar, you know, and feel a little less intimidated to just try it. Doesn't mean we want to do it all, and it doesn't mean Joyce and I on the site have to lead every step of the way through the construction process. It doesn't mean we have some things we really don't like to do.
Right.
But, you know, you at least kind of are familiar with how to do different things, and I feel comfortable with them.
Now, here in the Southwest, you can pretty easily build a house that requires little or no heating if you face it toward the sun and orient the windows the right way and all that stuff. Have you caught up with that? I mean, I've noticed that there's a lot of houses that go up in Santa Fe that might as well be going up in Saskatchewan. You know, right. They're not solar, and they should be.
Well, we've been fortunate in that over the years, I started out as a volunteer with Habitat 6 years ago, and then have been a part-time staff since then. But we already had incorporated certain aspects just because of the whole simple, affordable, decent housing. We use a very high level of insulation in the walls already, and it creates almost that adobe type structure. Dow Chemical I donates insulated foam board to every affiliate in the United States. And so our houses, if you go by at a certain phase, the entire outside of the house is wrapped in this baby blue 2-inch thick foam that is an insulator. And then in addition to that, we insulate inside the walls with we used to use cellulose recyclable insulation. Sometimes we use fiberglass. It really just depends on availability and time and weather and time of year and those sorts of things. And so we had some aspects of green build in that. Our architect was very sensitive to, I mean, when we get a lot, unfortunately, the lots aren't often set up to accommodate passive solar or things like that. But where we can do it, we certainly do. And we usually try to have a fair amount of windows for cross breeze and good ventilation. But, you know, if you have a very narrow lot that you're trying to put a house on, you can't play with too much of the orientation. And now, building in the city, we are also under the same building code, the green building code. So this particular house, we had to do a few different things with the framing, which meant we utilized less wood in the house itself. And so, it's different little aspects of that.
We're talking to Eliza Frank and Joyce Roberts about Habitat for Humanity. So these are houses that get built with huge amounts of volunteer labor. Do the future homeowners gather together that labor? Does Habitat or some of both? How does it work?
Well, it works both ways. Habitat has some regular volunteers. Right now there's about 21 of them, and those are people that show up sort of certain days of the week for certain amounts of time. All right, so like I am, I show up now 3 days a week for the full day each of those 3 days. Other people show up for a half day, a couple days a week. So that's one. Then there are people like caravanners, college groups, church groups.
What are caravanners?
Yeah. Caravanners. Caravanners are people who generally live in their RV. They don't necessarily have a home, and some of them still have a home. And they go around the country from habitat site to habitat site, working on the sites, volunteering for the sites 2 weeks at a time, and call them caravanners.
And are they're volunteers? They just pay that out of their own pocket?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So they come and volunteer.
Yeah. We try to accommodate by finding them an inexpensive place to hook up and things like that. But they are, just like all the other volunteers, they're volunteering their time, and it's kind of how they chose to spend their retirement.
Very interesting.
And then the families will get maybe some work groups, people that know them at work to come out, other family members obviously to come out to volunteer to work on the house.
So what happens? You've got a situation where you've got a ton of volunteers working on a build, and some of them are learning as they go, as you've said. What if they make egregious mistakes? Is there a supervisor who is looking at all of that stuff to make sure that the roof doesn't fall on your head or the tiles on your collapse under your feet?
Right. Well, and that's, again, where it's good that it's not brain, you know, surgery. It's really... Joyce and I are there, and we have our construction director, Bruce, and we have AmeriCorps members who are also there, and then you have regulars or people who are familiar with the process. You really don't necessarily end up volunteering physically on the site. You spend all day as the teacher and just kind of checking back and answering questions, and when things don't go right, you take them apart and you reconstruct them. And then, you know, we do have, we still have inspections. We have the regular city or county inspector, depending on where we're building at. We also, you know, just mostly try to take time, really emphasize to people it's about getting it done right the first time. And if it doesn't get done right, you just take it apart and you start over. You know, it's that, you know, you want to, we're there throughout the day so that hopefully you never have to do anything like redo all the trusses on a roof or anything like that.
That would be very bad.
And then we also, our particular affiliate, you know, each affiliate, each, you know, Santa Fe affiliate is separate from the Taos affiliate, is separate from the Albuquerque affiliate. They're all kind of their own operations. And so they may be run in various different ways with who's on their staff, but they almost all have construction supervisors. And they're really the people that are out there working with the architect to get the plans, working, getting the volunteers organized every day, having the materials built. And our particular affiliate typically subcontracts out items like the actual roof surfacing. We might be up there putting down the OSB, or the board as we call it, or the paper, but they install the roof. We've also gone to actually having subcontractor do the stucco work. We put up the lath and everything, but there are certain things that are a bit of an art, and either we just haven't persevered through teaching people that over and over again, or it's just cost effective to have a subcontractor come in and do certain things like that. And again, some of them charge us the going rate. Sometimes they can donate their time. We have different people who will donate their services at various times.
And people donate materials too.
Right. And the Women Build in particular, Lowe's donated a very significant amount of money for the program, and $10,000 of that was through basically a credit line at their store for materials.
Nice.
Habitat does still buy a fair amount of materials, and until recently, until the tax laws changed in New Mexico, we actually even paid tax on it. But it just varies from house to house. Like I said, nationally, we have our sponsors like Dow, the foam board. Whirlpool donates all the appliances for the home, all the basic, you know, stove and refrigerator. And we have various different organizations that do things like that. And then some of it's just a local relationship for windows or doors or those sorts of items.
Now, Habitat for Humanity is, I was surprised to find out, having had you on the air for many years on this program, I was reading the website, it's a Christian ministry.
Correct.
How does that work?
Well, it was founded by the gentleman Miller Fuller as a Christian agency. Christian organization, and actually it's not uncommon in the practice of the zero interest mortgage is taken from a verse in the Bible. And so sometimes at our home dedications, when the person's getting ready to move in, we might have a ceremony or something, and often that particular verse is pointed out. Each home recipient gets a hammer and a Bible when they move into their home at our service. But again, I think every affiliate kind of has its own flavor. And I've noticed in the Santa Fe organization, I mean, we have groups from every walk of life and every religious affiliation and atheist and anything else, as well as partner families that aren't necessarily affiliated with any particular church. When we've done Women Build in the past, I worked Sundays 1 year so that we could enable folks from the Jewish community to come and work, because they, you know, Saturdays may be their day off work, but it's not the day they choose to come and do volunteer work. And so it's a pretty open community, I find, in Santa Fe, and particularly with the diversity of the faith community in Santa Fe, I think it really reflects that. But I know, as our caravanners, as we mentioned earlier, the folks in the RVs that go place to place, they really get a flavor of different kind of affiliates and their approaches. And we've also done what we call blitz builds that are faith builds, where we call in the faith community to send all the volunteers to build a house. And they built a house in 18 days once.
Oh, my goodness.
And that particular setup was, you know, both all the volunteers were from the faith community. The lunches were brought by faith community folks. They did have a prayer in the morning. Some of our caravanners have a devotional in the morning for 5 minutes, you know, before we get started. And the whole their whole mission is it's not a handout, it's a hand up. And so it varies a lot. And particularly if somebody's, it's a very good question. If somebody's uncomfortable, gee, if I come out to volunteer in the site, what is expected
of
me as far as
participation? Right.
Right. And I think I can speak for ourselves. I know we're very flexible to however anybody wants to participate. If a family person wants to have their pastor read a saying at the dedication, we'll all perhaps, be quiet and stand back and do that. But not everybody has to participate in a prayer or feel any pressure to do that sort of thing. And so that's a very good question.
You at Habitat for Humanity here in Santa Fe recently had a build on which a whole bunch of teenagers participated. Is that correct?
Yes, just last week. It was on several of our builds. We had a group from Pasadena, Texas, a choir. And there were 52 teenagers that were staying at Gloria the Baptist Convention.
Now, these are caravanners?
Was just a church group who came on a big bus to the area. You have to be 16 years old or older to work on a Habitat site. So that knocked out quite a few of their kids. And so their kids went and volunteered at Kitchen Angels and other organizations in town. And then we had 28, I believe, 16 to 18-year-olds join us at the site. And so we just had additional supervisors come on site. I usually do Women Build, but I went out and I took a group of 10 young ladies the first day out to Oshara where we've been working to plant all the trees and do all the landscaping that we needed to do. And then the next day took another group over to help me work on another house that we've just been finishing up that we built over a year ago right there off Paseo de Peralta and Gomez. And so it's a very different experience when you have, 28, 16 to 18-year-olds on your site versus other days when it's all of the mostly our retired regulars. And,
right.
It's a whole different energy and it's very fun. Again,
were they singing?
They didn't sing. We've had other groups that do sing. But it was funny. I actually took a group of them across the street to Sage Bakery for a break because they were saying how hungry they were. And I said, well, we're right across the street. So they went in and I was busy outside. But as I came up to the counter afterwards, the wait person behind the counter said, those are the most polite young people I've ever met. So
and you were saying, you said, they're not from here.
That's right. They're not from here. But they brought a lot of goodwill into the community. And, and again, that's where you really do kind of teach. You got to keep an eye. You'll say, move this here to there, and they kind of forget halfway through. And so you're a little more involved more continuously because they're a very different age and a very different comprehension of, step by step. But they did, excellent work, and it's always great to have the variety. I used to sometimes dread. I'm like, oh, my gosh, all these teenagers, and they're texting away and things like that. But you can ask them, okay, only on breaks. We're putting away the phones and everybody hunker down. And they were really good hard workers.
We're talking to Eliza Frank and Joyce Roberts from Habitat for Humanity. Now, tell us about the Habitat Restore.
The Restores. Restore is a great source of income for the Habitat. Really helps us build houses.
Now it's a store.
It's a store. It's down on Cerritos Road where the old Hastings was.
Right.
And what it does is it will take in construction materials. They have certain items they won't take, but they take in a lot of construction materials, leftovers from other construction sites. Sometimes the stuff is brand new, not even out of the box yet. They take in paint, electrical parts, plumbing parts,
and
doors.
It's all donated from somebody.
And it's all donated. And then people can buy it, obviously, at a reduced cost compared to going to a regular hardware store to buy the same item. And the person who runs that, Simone, has done an excellent job in bringing in money for Habitat for Humanity and how she prices the items so that
Yeah, that must be a trick in itself, because especially, I remember going there a few years ago, and I bought this vintage olive green filing cabinet that looked like something out of a black and white movie from the 40s with a hard-boiled detective going to a file. How do you price something like that? That's an art in itself.
She's a very skilled individual with her retail work. Because they also take quite a bit of furniture and cabinetry and all those things too. So I mean, the general public can donate, but she is very cautious about what she takes in, and she runs a very, you know, you can go to some restores around the country and it'll be like a flea market, or like the place up in Los Alamos, the whole where you can kind of wander through corridors of stuff piled up. She runs a very nice, clean, organized, things aren't broken. She really, you know, is selective about what's taken in, and then selective about how she sells it, and they raise enough money to build at least, I think it's 3 to 5 houses a year right now. They are very successful, and so we were really pleased. They just moved to the Cerrillo store in the last couple of years, and we used to be a little more tucked off behind off Siler Park Lane, and I think the visibility has been nice too, and it's a very nice space. You don't go in and feel like it's a junk store going through to find things, and the prices reflect that. You know, it's not about piling through a bunch of items. And then you had mentioned earlier too, I mean, how does Habitat raise the funds? Each affiliate has to come up with the money to build these homes, and though we receive a great deal of donations, it still costs quite a bit in Santa Fe to build a home and buy land and that sorts of things. And so the Restore is a huge fundraiser for us, in addition to community fundraisers. Just a couple months ago, we had a shovel art auction at one of the galleries to raise money.
Shovel art?
Yes. We had one of our board directors came up with the idea of taking small, you know, taking shovels and handing them out to different artists to create different kinds of things. So from toll painting to, we had people using flower pots to create whole families of shovels.
Oh, and my goodness.
From, you know, art scenes to Native American themed art to, you know, abstract art to you name it. There were a lot of them, and some were photography based, some, you know, it was an amazing collection, and so they had an auction to again fundraise. And other times it's the more straightforward, if you receive our newsletter, you receive an envelope each quarter, and not also just becoming, letting folks know that you're out there and that the Santa Fe affiliate is separate from international. A lot of people do give to international, and so when they see us, they say, oh, I give to Habitat. And it's funny, because if you're in the organization, you're kind of like, well, do you give to Santa Fe Habitat,
right,
or do you give to the organization as a whole? And then again, the volunteers, the families do bring folks, and there is word of mouth, and people have heard of it, but that's partly why we're on your show, is we have to drum up a lot of people day in and day out. We work Tuesday through Saturday year round. And so other than on a holiday or something, it really ebbs and flows. We're very fortunate. In the spring, we have a lot of colleges come out for spring break, or in the summer, we have different groups come through. But our Women Build wasn't a very full calendar coming into this month. And I think it's specifically because people get busy with their summers, and you know, it kind of drops off your radar. And I think it's always a constant challenge to not only be raising funds, but to be raising the volunteers and the interest for people to, gee, I have an afternoon or a day, preferably, and that might be something I really want to try out.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you out there are listening and you would like to volunteer for Habitat for Humanity, what should they do? They should give you a call? Or?
Right. They can sign up to one of two ways. They can go online any time of day or night that they'd like. That Habitat website is santafehabitat.org.
That's easy.
Word. Yeah.
santafehabitat.org.
And then they can also call the office at 986-5880. And they can just speak to whoever answers the phone, but specifically they'll want to talk to Karen at Extension 11, and she signs everybody up on our calendar and tries to coordinate groups. If you go online, you can actually, once you go through a brief orientation that kind of talks about the history of Habitat in general, you can get a password, and you can actually view calendars and see when dates are available or when the site might be closed for a holiday. So a lot of it depends on when you kind of do your business and whether you want to deal with a person or would like to do it online. But and we do have some big groups coming right now. So if your first choice for a date isn't available, certainly look to other options, because we really would love to accommodate people as best we can. The hard part is sometimes people want to do a specific kind of construction task, and that's harder to get, you know that more than a couple weeks out.
Right.
Our Women Build was projected to run through August, maybe even to the beginning of September, and we're actually very much ahead of schedule.
Nice.
So we're going to, some of our groups that call to sign up, especially the teams, we're going to encourage them to still sign up for Women Build, but we might end up having them work on a different Habitat house. And so as long as they're, you know, it all goes towards Habitat, they'll still have Joyce and I working as their team supervisor, that sort of stuff. So, but I mean, particularly the women and the Women Build team, the individuals can sign up now, and if that house gets done, it might get harder, but Joyce is out there also every Wednesday. You know, if you feel a little like, gee, what am I walking into, you know, it's still worth it as a woman to go out and just try it a half day, and you know, there's different groups of people on any particular day, and we certainly want to accommodate everybody. And I never thought in a million years when we were coming here at the very end of June that I'd be saying we only have one more month worth of construction on this house. And, of course, weather, as it starts to rain outside again, may totally throw that into flux again. But we've had to quit a couple different days because of high winds and or lightning and rain. But we just really want to encourage people to act on that impulse. If you're interested, go ahead and give it a try.
Especially if you're a woman.
Right. And if you want to know more specific details about what you'll be working on, or, gee, how do I come on a day when I know there'll be a female supervisor at the site, just talk to Karen at the office.
Eliza Frank and Joyce Roberts are with Habitat for Humanity, the Women Build. The number is 986-5880. And the website is santafehabitat.org. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. I'm very happy now to welcome Ben Chavarria. He is with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northern New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for inviting me.
So Big Brothers Big Sisters is a national organization, and you are in the local chapter here. You are a big brother.
I am.
What do you do as a big brother?
Well, previously I was a big brother, and now I was the first person to apply for the 100 Days, 100 Men campaign. So I'll be reinstated as a big. So I should be matched hopefully this week.
Now, 100 Men, 100 Days, what's that all about?
Basically, we have a long list of eligible, you know, littles, young men that don't have a big. So basically what we're going to try to do is recruit up to 100 men to be bigs for our littles that are waiting on a list. We have a list that's been, you know, in place for years, and we can't seem to ever fill it. It's hard to find male volunteers that, you know, actually can give their time and that are willing to give their time.
Is it easier to find big sisters?
It is easier to find big sisters. I think it's part to do with as a female, there's a lot more nurturing involved in your normal everyday life than as a male. And males, of course, you know, we seem to be like more of a provider. So our job is more of work, you know. But it's changing now, you know, as females are becoming more active in the workplace. Of course, it's going to be a little bit more challenging to find females.
So for, if you have, for example, a child that's waiting who's a boy, do you sometimes pair boys with big sisters?
If I'm not mistaken, a big sister can be a big for a little boy.
But not the other way around.
Not the other way around, correct.
And anyway, there's a shortage of big brothers, so you pair them with the boys. What's the advantage of having a male big brother for a male child?
Well, the biggest thing is you want to be a positive role model. And you want to give him some of the traits of being a young man. You know, being involved in maybe a sport. Maybe sporting events or outdoor events, you know, maybe hiking or fishing or, you know, target shooting or whatever it may be. A lot of our littles don't have a male figure in their life, or maybe they do, and their male figure can't spend the amount of time that they'd like to with them, and that's where a big will step in.
So do you sometimes also have children, young boys or young men who have a negative father figure or stepfather figure in their lives that you kind of have to counter?
Well, you know, being a big, we're not privileged to any of their personal information. So I don't know exactly what their background is. We'll get a little bit of a background. They do when they pair us up, when they actually introduce us to our littles, they've already done testing and seen what kind of personality we have, and they try to pair us up with somebody that has the same kind of quality traits.
Oh, that's a nice thing. So how long were you a big brother for?
The first time I was for a year, and then my little decided that he wanted to go on and do things more with his family, which was, you know, understandable. But, we hear a lot of success stories where people have a little that they end up being friends with for life.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to a woman the other day who actually was recommended that you come on the show, who had a little sister, and she saw her through the whole process of school and college applications, and she graduated from college and has a great job now, and it's huge success stories.
Yeah, and that's very commonplace, especially when you consider that nowadays there's a lot of broken homes, you know, where you have a father figure that's not in the home. And so when you start having a big like myself step in, you know, we're hoping that we'll be a part of that, of our little's lives, you know, indefinitely. And then, of course, you know, the females that I know that are bigs, they've lasted a long time, and they create really good friendships. So I'm hoping to get my new little and it'd be someone that I'm very compatible with, and we could be friends for years to come.
What are some of the problems in this particular community that boys in the Santa Fe area are having?
Well, you know, speaking from my job, and I can't really say what my job is right now, but from my job, I've seen that there's a lot of kids that come from homes where there is drugs or alcohol involved. And it's unfortunate, because when kids are brought up in that kind of environment, it seems to bleed over into their personal life. And the positive thing is a lot of the mothers and fathers, you know, that have these children, they actually see that they have this problem. And that's why they, you know, ask for assistance. And I can't speak to what kind of backgrounds any of our kids, you know, have. But, you know, any time that a parent takes an active role in the child's life and actually signs them up for a big is very positive.
When you decide that you're going to be a big brother, what is the commitment, or big sister, what is the commitment that you make?
Well, you got to understand it's a one-year commitment at the very least. And you're going to give anywhere from 6 to 8 hours a month, which is very little, you know. When I decided, I actually sit on the regional development board with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and we were working on the 100 Days, 100 Men campaign, and I thought, you know, if I'm going to be involved in recruiting, then I ought to be, you know, practicing what I preach. So I said, I'm going to apply. Turns out I was the first person to apply for the campaign. And, you know, the process is, you know, even with my background, the process is pretty rigorous. You know, they do an extensive criminal background. They do, a personal background. And it takes a while. It's not a process that, you know, you sign your application today and tomorrow you know who your little is. You know, they're gonna make sure that you know, we're putting them in safe hands and putting them in a safe environment, and that everything checks out on the volunteer.
Once you get a little brother, little sister, what are the kinds of activities that you see people doing together with the big and littles?
Well, you know, Big Brothers Big Sisters is very, very active in continuing the match. And what they do is they provide some activities. You know, they have camping outings, and for the most part, for a few months at the beginning of, you're not going to have an overnight, you know, but camping, you know, going out to the wilderness or going out to fishing, or, and they provide some of these programs that we could, or, you know, activities that we could go to. The other thing is they do have nights that, you know, we might get half price or, you know, free movies, or, and then you know, even what we have for Bowl for Kids' sake, you know, we could be involved in it. And so they help you out with activities also. Me personally, you know, I really like outdoor activities, so hopefully I'll find a little that's really into doing outdoor activities. And there's, you know, we're lucky we live in a very accommodating area that we could go outside and do a lot of activities. You know, we have mountains and
we have
flat
mountains
plains
within city
and lakes
limits
and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's going to be really positive. It'll be nice to have someone to hang out with on my own, you know, on my own free time.
Do you find that most of the people who get big brothers and big sisters are people who don't have children themselves?
I can't really say that because, you know, it just takes someone that really wants and cares about someone in the community. Because whether you have a kid or not, you know, for you to sign up, that's a commitment. It's a one-year commitment, you know, and you got to understand that no matter what you do with this little, it's going to impact their life, you know, from that day forward. So I can't say that there's more or less individuals that have children.
What were some of your most fun or proud moments when you were a big brother?
The last time that I was a big brother, my little, when he graduated from the fifth grade, you know, I went to his graduation and it was really nice, you know, and I would see him, even now, I haven't been his big for over 5 years, but when I see him at the mall or if I see him at the store, he always remembers who I am and he'll come up and talk to me. And so that's, you know, that's very positive. And I was lucky last year for the holiday seasons, we were doing a holiday gift basket program with my job, and I actually ran into him. And, you know, it was really nice to see him in the holiday season, you know, and to find out that he was still doing well. And, you know, since then his family's moved on and he has a father figure that's in his life now, and that's very positive.
Now, if somebody is a big brother and they run into some kind of unforeseen problem that they don't know how to handle, what kind of support do they get from the organization?
The organization has the people that match us, the people that match us are there. If we have, you know, if there's a conflict of maybe the parents or the little, you know, can't get along with the big, then they'll bring them in and they'll go ahead and either try to resolve it. And if they can't resolve it, then they'll match them up with somebody else. So they're always going to be involved in our friendship, in our match, because you know, they're, of course, as an organization, they want to make sure that the best interest of the children and the volunteers, you know, is taken into heart.
So 100 men in 100 days, that's what you're looking for. People who have not committed a felony and who've got some time in their life and some room in their heart.
Correct. So, you know, and it's not a big, I really don't think that it's a big undertaking to do this. What they should do is, you know, and they are doing it, especially as a board, we're looking at tapping into our senior citizens. There's a lot of culture and a lot of history and a lot of patience that a lot of our seniors in our community have. And so we've talked about tapping into that resource. And, you know, if we were to tap into that, I think that we'd have, you know, we might even get to the point where we have a waiting list of bigs. And that would be, you know, amazing.
That's the problem you want to have.
Yeah, that'd be a positive problem.
Ben Chavarria is with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Santa Fe. And if you want to reach them...
Okay, the phone number for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northern New Mexico is 505-983-8360. Or you can walk into the office at 1229 South St. Francis Drive, Suite Number C.
Very nice. Well, Ben, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, ma'am.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org. Podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.